I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we will talk about job prospects in Central Indiana and the economic outlook for 2011. We will discuss all of this with Gary Dick, the host of Inside Indiana Business, Pat Gibbons of the consulting firm Walker, Ron Gifford of the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, and Jerry Conover, who is director of the Indiana Business Research Center of the IU Kelley School of Business. And, of course, you. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Please do join this important conversation about Indiana's economic present and future. First, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking today about jobs in Central Indiana and the 2011 economic outlook on this St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patty's Day for all of you out there. Our guests, we're fortunate to be joined today by Gary Dick, who is the host of Inside Indiana Business. Gary, good to have you with us.
Thank you. Great to be here, John.
Thanks for joining us. Pat Gibbons, who is the Senior Vice President for the consulting firm Walker. Good to have you here, Pat.
Glad to be here.
Thanks. Ron Gifford, Executive Vice President for Policy for the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership. Ron, glad to have you here.
Good afternoon, John.
Good to be here. And Jerry Conover, who is the Director of the Indiana Business Research Center at the IU Kelley School of Business. Boy, you guys have mouthfuls of titles. Jerry, it's good to have you here.
Glad to be here, too. Thanks.
Well, we're talking about the jobs outlook and the economic outlook for Indiana in particular in 2011. Gary and Pat, I understand that you've done some research on that. Could you share some of your findings right now?
Sure.
We'll start with Pat.
Okay.
Yes.
Walker and Inside Indiana Business have teamed up to form the Indiana Business Council, which is a panel, essentially, of Hoosiers in business. People that are interested in participating in the panel can log on to www.indianabusinesscouncil.com to register and participate in surveys that we do every other month. So this was our first one. We were focused on the outlook for Indiana business, and the report so far is positive. So most people are very optimistic about where their businesses are headed in 2011. A lot of interesting ways that we've looked at the data, which we'll talk about throughout the show, but largely people feel like their businesses are headed in the right direction. They feel good about their leadership, and they feel like the sales area is the area that's going to need the most focus. There is some varying optimism. While they feel like the direction is positive, there's still a little skepticism about their hiring practices, and I'm sure that's what we'll get into today.
Well, yeah, Gary, do you want to add something
I think
quickly,
that's very true. We were a little bit surprised, I guess. I think just anecdotally, I've seen a lot of optimism just talking to business owners, executives around the state. But I was a little bit surprised at the level of optimism that came through in the survey. The one thing that's interesting, I think, is borne out in a lot of different areas is that I think 40% of respondents, only 40%, expect to hire any workers this year. So optimism on the one hand, but on the other hand, companies just say, hey, we're reluctant to hire. And in many cases, it may be they've gotten more efficient during the recession, and unfortunately, they don't need that many additional workers. So the jobs piece that everyone is waiting for, that still seems to be lagging a bit.
And that's sort of been the dichotomy of this recovery, too, is that we've seen the markets obviously rebound pretty effectively. I mean, we had a low of, what, about 6,600? Was that a year and a half, 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. And then we've crested sometimes over 12. Yeah. And yet the jobs recovery hasn't kept pace with that. Why is that, Jerry Conover?
Well, there's a natural hesitancy of employers to put people to work if they're not sure that their business is going to be growing. And there's been a lot of uncertainty in the economic outlook for the last few years. Well, first there was just downright gloom. But over the past year, as economic output has been growing, employers have still been slow to hire because a couple of factors. One, they've been able to rework their production processes or their business operations to not need as many workers, getting gains in productivity. And secondly, they don't want to make the longer-term commitments of putting new people to work or even calling back old ones until they have some real confidence that demand will stay up and business conditions will stay strong. And I think you see even just in the recent weeks with uneasiness in the Mideast and then the troubles in Japan that some hiring is probably starting to slow down again already because everybody's a little anxious. They're edgy about what the future holds.
Ron Gifford, what do you think it would take to ease that anxiety, to make people feel more comfortable making the commitment that is involved in hiring someone?
Right. Well, I think one of the primary issues companies are facing right now is this notion of what to do with the capital they're sitting on or how to access capital. So in the economic development world, what we've seen is a very strong pipeline on the front end. Companies looking at expansion plans or building new plants, and so the economic development groups here in town have reported an uptick in activity the first quarter of this year, a lot of companies coming into town. So very strong pipeline on the front end, and then a lot of deals just going on hold as companies are now wondering, should we pull the trigger on this investment? Can we get financing? We continue to hear that on the street of companies wanting to move forward but having real trouble accessing capital. And it still seems to be the case that if you don't need the money, the banks are willing to lend it to you. But if you do need it, it's really hard to get it. So somehow we need to break that logjam on access to capital. And then I think you'll see a lot of deals happening.
Well, Gary Dick, I mean, you probably study this as closely as anyone. How do you break that logjam? I mean, how do you work through it?
Yeah, that's the well, I was going to say $64,000, but it's a much larger
inflation. Has worked on that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a good question. It's a question that everyone is talking about and asking about, and it's interesting because if you talk to bankers, they say we're loaning money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk to companies, they say no, well, we don't think so. And I guess it all gets down to the requirements and the restrictions and the covenants that banks are now putting on companies to loan them the money. So sure, yeah, we are loaning money, but the restrictions, companies will say, some will say the restrictions are so onerous that we're not getting the money in a fashion that we can use it.
Yeah. Gives us the flexibility to do.
Yep. What they want to do, yep.
Well, let's talk a little bit. Gary's got to leave after the first segment, so let's talk a little bit about this study because you collaborated on this, and more specifically about what you found in it. First, what things specifically were you measuring?
Yeah, and I'm going to jump in. I want Pat to continue. This partnership is not just a one-time thing. We want to do this we are doing this every other month on key issues. And the whole premise, the whole idea here is to literally connect with the business community around the state to get their pulse, if you will, on key issues. So this first one was a general economic outlook. What do folks think about 2011 as we head into the new year? And Pat, I'll have you, you know, talk about a few of the metrics.
Right. Well, we've talked about a couple of the key ones. Generally, the outlook is positive. People feel good about where we're going. But to give you a couple of the
If I could real quickly so people know, how are you measuring that? I mean, what sort of question are you asking to get to that?
Well, generally, we're asking a little bit about the direction of the company. How do you feel? And we're really trying to get to that emotional, how do you feel about where your company's going in the areas of sales, for instance? You know, 73% were positive that sales were on the uptick. What do you think about your spending? 68% said spending is going to be positive this year. What about the demand for your products? That was another one, 72%, almost three-quarters said that is headed in the right direction. But as we mentioned earlier, when we said, how about hiring people? Only 40% said that they were would strongly agree or agree that they were, their inclination was that there was going to be a lot of hiring at their company. So those were some of the indicators telling us whether they had a good outlook for this year.
And this is a fairly diverse pool of registered respondents, not just CEOs or senior level executives. A number of those are in there, but also business professionals, salespeople, those types of folks who work at companies around the state. So it gives you a more general view, I think, of the attitude and the outlook.
How did you choose your sample, as it were? Was it self-selected?
Yes, it is. And that's an important distinction, and that's exactly the way we want it. When we designed this, we really want to get the pulse of Hoosiers that really want to participate and be part of this community that will be routinely providing their input. So we were very pleased that when we started this in December, that nearly 4,000 Hoosiers have signed up to participate in these regular studies, and over half responded to this first study. So it's a really healthy indication that there's people out there that are very interested in expressing their opinion about business and what's going on in their business, and knowing what's going on in other businesses around the state.
And how far do you break it down? I mean, is it done by geography here in the state?
We do.
There's some places in Indiana that are doing better than others, where people are happier?
Well, it's for the most part, across the board, it's pretty similar from a geographic standpoint. We did notice, because some of the breakdowns we'll ask is their role in the company. So naturally, we will see a difference between what CEOs and other leaders are saying versus, staff employees and people on the production floor. We also ask size of company and a few other demographics so that we can constantly kind of slice and dice the data and understand if there's more stories in there.
Yeah, and I think
Gary
it's interesting. You bring up, John, a good point. Are there parts of the state doing better than others? And certainly Jerry and Ron can chime in on this too. But, I think generally speaking, Indianapolis, central Indiana, continues to do, relatively speaking, pretty well. But I think the challenge from a statewide perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Jerry, but is to get other regions of the state, participating and generating economic activity, in the positive direction. I think the big complaint I've heard so much is, Indianapolis continues to carry the state from an economic standpoint.
Jerry,
sure.
Chime in.
And Gary's right that, of course, the large chunk of the population is in the central Indiana area around Indianapolis, and certainly a large portion of the economic output and economic growth takes place in this region. There have been some other pockets of notable growth and prospects for more in southeastern Indiana, around along the river, New Albany, Jeffersonville area. Up in the Fort Wayne area, there's been some good developments, although some downturns as well with closings of plants and the like. But I think maybe one of the biggest and perpetual divisions within the state is that the rural areas generally have not had anywhere near the growth that you find in the larger metro areas. And that's something that is a challenge for the state to deal with.
I'd like to pick up on that a little bit. Are there any segments, like metropolitan segments of the state, that are lagging behind? I do want to get to that rural question, because I know John Katzenberger's group did some research on that, and really the tax flow is as well, that I think we could probably bring into this discussion too. But are there any cities in Indiana that are lagging? I mean, at least every time I drive through Gary, sense that.
In Northwest, and this is anecdotal, but certainly Northwest Indiana has continued to face challenges. You look at a community like Terre Haute, which I think actually has some good stuff going on right now with downtown development. They built a new children's museum and some hotels and things, but Terre Haute and West Central Indiana has continued to face some challenges in that part of the state. And obviously, as you look at the auto communities, places like Kokomo and Marion, although you look at those places, and Chrysler is investing, I think, more than $1 billion in operations in Kokomo. So challenges, but also some indications that things are looking up as well.
Well, we had Wayne Siebold, who's the, mm-hmm. the mayor mm-hmm. of Marianata on our first program, and he said basically yeah. just that. It's bad, but it is yeah. getting somewhat better. We're talking about the economic outlook for 2011 and jobs here in central Indiana on No Limits. Our guests are Gary Dick, Jerry Conover, Pat Gibbons, and Ron Gifford. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking about the economic outlook for central Indiana, also the jobs outlook. Our guests are Pat Gibbons, Senior Vice President for the consulting firm Walker, Ron Gifford, Executive Vice President for Policy, the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, Jerry Conover, Director of the Indiana Business Research Center, the IU Kelly School of Business. We did have Gary Dick with us. He had to step out to go record his own show. He's the host of Inside Indiana Business. And I also would like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We have gotten a question via email that I'm going to throw out and see which of our distinguished panel members would like to deal with it. This comes from Jesse Pitzer. It says, I'm 29, employed with an BSME and MBA, and there are hardly any jobs available for young professionals like myself in Indianapolis. Employers only want to hire people who already work the exact job that is open. There is no willingness to train even highly educated and highly motivated people. Most of my friends who went to school in Indiana have or are waiting to move to Chicago or other large cities due to limited job prospects and the lack of commitment of this city and state government to move into the future via mass transportation, urban development, and legal marriage equality. Politicians obsess about our broken educational system while ignoring the fact that half of the people Indiana does graduate leave immediately. The only people that move here are typically less educated people who add to the suburban sprawl. Does Indiana leadership have any plan to deal with this, or are they just going to give us more lip service and inaction? If they don't fix this soon, I'll probably be a Chicagoan before long. Ron Gifford, that sounds like
that's a buffet of a question,
yeah,
isn't it? Huh?
Yeah, it is. It is. Well,
so the first thing I would say is that it's something we hear a lot from young professionals, but we also hear on the other side from companies who talk about wanting to hire qualified, skilled folks just like Jesse here, mm-hmm. and not being able to find them. So one of the things we have to work on is how to make that connection between talented young folks who are looking for new professional opportunities and the companies that are looking for those, particularly the smaller, mid-sized companies that are desperate for this kind of talent. The question is absolutely correct in the sense that what drives business expansion, what drives business recruitment here is talent. And unless you have the talent in the community, you have an awfully hard time attracting the kinds of businesses, industry sectors, whether it's life sciences, advanced manufacturing, or industries like that. And some of the issues that were mentioned there really go to talent attraction. Mass transit, for example, having a good transit system is something that increasingly young professionals look for in a community. Diversity in population, diversity in terms of housing options, urban living versus being able to live in a more suburban environment, things like that. Give me a call afterwards. I would say to this caller, the person who submitted the question, and perhaps we can talk about how we can put this person in touch with some of the groups in town who are doing exactly this.
Do you want to toss out a phone number? I'm sure Jesse's listening. And
yeah, sure. And the rest of you,
okay.
feel free.
You're going to be.
Yeah. Well, you can shoot me an email online. So shoot me an email at rgifford@cincorp.com. And we can put you in touch with some groups in town like Indie Hub, mm-hmm. which really focuses on young professionals, helping them make connections and the like. I'm sympathetic to the tone, of the question, and this need for really being sure that we're recruiting top talent, because that's going to drive our economy more than any other thing we could probably talk about today.
Well, and that's, in some ways, this brings us back to the point where we started this conversation, which really is the, you know, the disconnect between, at least in public perception, and to some degree in the numbers, between economic growth and job creation. So can we talk a little bit? It's obviously that's part of the argument that's going on over in the Indiana General Assembly, the House of Representatives, is you've got two different visions of what should be occurring there, and no way to breach the gulf. I mean, what, Pat, do you say to someone like Jesse?
Yeah. Well, Jesse's, I detect, and I'm going to go back to something that we found Hoosier saying, and that is on the topic of morale. And mm-hmm. it's a little bit a side point, but I think we can bring it back to jobs development, because I think an important part is also mm-hmm. job retention and development of our current employees. And I know that was one of the things that he mentioned. When we work with companies, you know, we get a lot of feedback, and every company is different. But by and large, one of the top things employees say that they really care about is the care and concern from the company. And the biggest part of that is the development for their future. And let's face it, we've been through a time where many people have been fortunate enough just to hang on to their jobs. They've seen people on the right and left of them lose their jobs. They're happy to have a job. But with increased optimism, they're starting to say, you know, maybe there are some opportunities out there. And I've been doing the same thing for a long time. I don't feel like I'm advancing. It might be time to look around. And we found a lot of that in our study as well. Up to a quarter of people saying that they're considering looking for another job this year. And we've found that those stats are pretty low, that in our state, that's pretty positive. Across the nation, we've heard statistics as high as 54%. So I'm sympathetic as well. And I think there's a lot of things that companies can do internally to help develop their workforce.
We had a listener who called in who's got a question on this point, didn't want to go on the air, but said that he's 59 years old, recently displaced from his job, and hears about work retraining programs, but doesn't hear options on how to connect to them or resources to do that. Jerry Conover, can you speak to his concern a little bit? Or
well, there are opportunities for retraining throughout Indiana for workers who are trying to find the ability to do something different. Certainly, Ivy Tech Community College has ramped up its programs throughout the state for incumbent workers to develop either advanced skills that will help them in their current work or retrain for new work. And there are studies underway that will hopefully shed some additional light. For example, there's one we're working on currently at IU that is an analysis of the restructuring of the automotive workforce in not only Indiana, but Ohio and Michigan as well. We're partnering with agencies in all three states to look at what are the job opportunities for displaced auto workers, as that industry has shed hundreds of thousands of people. And then what are the career paths that make sense, given the skills that they have, and the experience they have, what could they be without too much extra training qualified to do? And then finally, identifying what the training opportunities are to get those additional skills that they need. This study should be released in May, and we'll have some light to shed on the problem, at least regarding the automotive sector. Similar kinds of work would probably be very helpful across a broader spectrum. And I know the Department of Workforce Development is working on analysis to try to help feed that kind of training need with hard data that would show where the needs are greatest.
Well, if you are someone, though, who's been displaced, Ron Gifford, you're making eye contact at a dangerous moment, so I'm going to throw the question your way. And that if you are in this caller's situation and you've been displaced from a job and you want to get retrained, who should you call?
I think the first place you should contact is your Workforce One Center. Okay. That's really the point of entry for the retraining programs, the kind of additional opportunities that Jerry was really talking about. So, so I'd encourage the caller or anyone else in that situation, start there at the Workforce One Center, because there are a whole host of options available at that point. So that would be the easiest and best point of entry to really get a large set of options presented to those folks.
I'd like to invite our listeners to continue participating in the conversation. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Take a step back here and ask perhaps the other end of that question. Where is the need? I mean, where are people trying to hire right now? That's another way to go after a job, is to think,
right,
okay, I'm going to figure out exactly where do employers say they need help right now? What areas generally? What skill sets are they looking for? Pat Gibbons?
Well, I'm just reflecting on, again, some of the feedback that we received. And there were two industries that seemed to stand out at least a little bit, and that their optimism in other business areas was also more optimistic in the hiring area, and that was technology and healthcare. So in those two industries, they seemed to be not only optimistic about where they're headed, but optimistic about, you know, bringing on people into their organization. So those are two that stand out.
We've just gotten an email from a listener, Kathleen Beck Kuhn, who says, "Do the panelists see an increase in rapid transit, updated public transit within central Indiana and connecting to the larger areas throughout the state as a vehicle for growth? How are businesses supporting this directly, i.e. more than verbally?" Ron Gifford, I think that one's in your wheelhouse pretty much.
That's right, John. In fact, one of my new responsibilities with CICP is going to be working with the Central Indiana Transit Task Force, which is the private sector-led portion of the Regional Transit Initiative. And this process has been going on for about 2 years now. The private sector very deeply committed to working with the public sector to put together a comprehensive, affordable transit plan to address some of the issues and concerns that the listener mentions. Getting workers from point A to point B in an affordable and quick time frame is one of the key aspects of economic development. A good regional transit plan is a really strong economic development plan. So this community really lacks that. That's obvious to all of us, and so we're trying to move aggressively in addressing that, because there are those folks who need public transit as a way to get from point A to point B because they don't have other means of doing that. So you need affordable mobility. Then increasingly we talk about this talent pool. Mm-hmm. You have these younger professionals who want that option of being able to use public transit as opposed to driving a car because of its convenience, because of the environmental impact. Because it's a lifestyle amenity that's attractive to them. It will help make this community a place where it's easier to attract, retain that kind of young talent. It helps address environmental issues that this community has. We have air attainment issues here that actually impede the growth of companies, because it's increasingly difficult for new businesses to get the kind of air permits that they need to expand or to locate here, because we're a non-attainment area for many factors. So transit is a huge issue that is really a major economic development driver and will really help this community continue to do great things.
Well, let me get to what I think was the second part of the listener's question, which is the business community on board with that? Do they, you know, they're going to have to be some fairly large checks written to accomplish all of this, more than fairly large, actually quite large checks to do it. Are they on board with that? Do they get it? And I'll toss that out to anyone who wants to take it.
Well, I can answer directly. I mean, if you look at the membership of the Transit Task Force, it's all private sector. They are people who are representatives of the businesses here in the community. One of the partners in this initiative is the Greater Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, one of the founding members of this. My organization, the Central Indiana Corporate Partnership, is an alliance of CEOs of some of the largest companies in Central Indiana, as well as the university presidents. The Central Indiana Community Foundation has been a primary supporter of this from a financial perspective as well. So there is really significant support in the business community for a regional transit plan. And what we're all working on right now is coming up with that consensus plan that makes sense from the perspective of providing the service and is affordable. It can be provided within the financial means that the community has to bring to bear on this. And so I would say the business community is very engaged on this, John, and it's working very hard to make this happen.
I would follow
ahead,
up and just comment that I think there's still a substantial sales pitch to be cultivated and disseminated to the public at large about the need for mass transit systems and the benefits gained from them that somehow seem to pass over a lot of ordinary citizens. Because to many, it probably sounds like something that's going to raise taxes substantially to come up with the public investment required. And they have to understand how the long-term benefits are not just esoteric quality of life things in a general sense, but actually have economic benefits more directly and can improve their quality of life.
Well, and that's one of the sort of traps of the what's become the ongoing political dialogue in this country, that tax increases are bad all the time, when in fact it's what you get for the tax increase.
Exactly.
I'm going to invite Dave, one of our listeners, to join the conversation right now. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. Thanks for joining the program. What's your question?
Well, I don't really have a question as much as a comment. I'd like to hear your opinion about what I have to say. I don't remember the guy's name, the listener who said that he was possibly going to become a Chicagoan soon. Mm-hmm. And I just tuned in when I heard him say that, and I just wanted to say I agree with him on most of the issues that he mentioned, such as mass transit and marriage equality and some of the other things that are important to members of my generation. I'm 26. I just graduated from college 3 years ago, and those things are very important, and I don't want to misrepresent what I'm saying as a slam against that, because I agree with him completely. But I think it's important to remember the progress that the city has made since the 80s, since the late 70s, early 80s, and the 180-degree turnaround really since then. I mean, Indianapolis is clearly the shining star in the state's economy, and, I mean, the census data has reflected that. The national attention that we've gotten with the Super Bowl and the Final Fours and everything has reflected that. And I think that it's, you know, everything he said is sensible, but it needs to be taken in the context of that progress, because, you know, a lot of it is state-based, not necessarily city-based. And I feel like maybe too much of what he was saying was directed against the city and not so much, you know, the state house and all the other greater powers than the city of Indianapolis that bring those things into the community.
Thanks for the call. Talk about that for just a couple of seconds. We're going to take a very short break, but is the assessment of a brain drain? I'll give you a chance actually to collect your thoughts after the break. We're talking about economic outlook and jobs creation here in Central Indiana with our guests Ron Gifford, Pat Gibbons, and Jerry Conover. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krull, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking about the economic outlook here in Central Indiana and jobs creation with our guests Ron Gifford, Pat Gibbons, and Jerry Conover. We got a question just before the break, more a comment from a caller, Dave, who said that the perception perhaps of the brain drain might not be quite as bleak as we think. Also made an argument that it's probably more an issue at the state level rather than here in Indianapolis. the city level. And I should add as some bit of perspective, I started in this business long ago as an editorial writer for the now defunct Indianapolis News. And I remember one of my very first editorials I ever wrote was about the brain drain problem in Indiana. And that was back when dinosaurs still roamed the earth. Have things gotten better or worse in the past 30 years or so in regard to that, Pat?
Well, yeah, I was happy to hear Dave's comments and optimism, and it actually reflects what we also heard from Hoosiers, and particularly, and I'm going to refer to it more in looking at Indiana versus the federal government. There was a distinct difference between the viewpoint of Hoosiers regarding their perceptions of the state government. 59% agree that state government offers business-friendly policies. Only 13% felt the same way about the federal level. 65% had a positive outlook in Indiana for the economic outlook, only 25%. And Dave's demographic, the young people, were particularly positive. So I think a lot has been done, and I think that's reflected in those comments from Hoosiers.
Ron Gifford.
John, I moved here in 1985 from San Francisco as a young lawyer. I could tell you it's a lot better today than it was back then. Indianapolis is increasingly, Indianapolis is the kind of place where young professionals increasingly want to come. And Aaron Wren, who is a very thoughtful guy, writes a blog called The Urbana Feel, said last year he was in town for a presentation and said, Indianapolis has never been a more important city in America than it is today, meaning that this community continues to be on the rise. We are playing a role. We are playing we have a place in the national dialogue, if you will, or in the sort of the national economic system that has us increasing in stature as opposed to a lot of other communities that are really trying to figure out how to deal with decline. So to the first question, sure, we're not Chicago today, but Chicago is one of the megacities of the world, you know, by all analyses.
But we're also not Cleveland or Detroit. But
we're not Cleveland or Detroit or even Cincinnati or St. Louis or other communities that are trying to fend off really significant issues of decline. And we have great opportunities before us. And the question really is, to what extent are we going to seize those? Are we going to make the kind of investments in things like public transit, in the kind of amenities that attract folks, in infrastructure, the non-sexy stuff, dealing with environmental issues, the CSO problem, things like that? Are we going to do that and move to the next tier, become a true tier one community? Or are we going to just sort of slide backward and rest on our laurels a little bit? Back in the 70s, it was audacious to suggest that we were going to become the amateur sports capital of the world, but that strategy put us in a position to host the Super Bowl next year. But more importantly, it made it possible for companies like Eli Lilly, Roche, Dow AgroSciences, Exact Target, other growth sectors in this community to attract the kind of folks they needed in order to become the global powers they are today. So it all interrelates, and the question for us is, what are we going to do to make sure the upward trajectory continues?
What separates Indianapolis from the Clevelands, the Detroits? What things have we done to make those distinctions over the years? You mentioned, obviously, it being the amateur sports capital of the world, but what other prescient decisions did we make that along the way? Jerry Conover.
Well, I would say that Indianapolis's economy has been historically somewhat more diversified than some of the other places. Detroit, for example, was so and still is so tied to the automotive industry that it wasn't a diversified portfolio. And when the auto sector really started struggling, the hundreds of thousands of jobs left Michigan, left the Detroit area, and some of them wound up here. People just moved away to where opportunity was. In Cleveland, there's a bit more momentum going currently. It's had the same woes as many large industrial cities of the Midwest over the decades, but they've got some notable regional economic development projects and organizations focusing on innovation-driven growth, and there's some signs of vitality sparking in that area. Indianapolis, fortunately, has quite a bit of that same kind of regional thinking focused on what are growth opportunities for the area that has built strength in the region. Our life sciences industry here is quite strong. Advanced manufacturing generally is very effective. Logistics as well. Some of the key target areas have been going here. But beyond the economic development focus, at least as important, I think, in attracting talent and retaining talent, has been attention to the cultural vitality of especially the core of the Indianapolis area. There are lots of opportunities to do things now in the way of entertainment and nightlife and museums and those sorts of things that weren't here 30 years ago. It's taken a time, a mix of both public and private sector leadership and investment to make these things happen. But those kinds of things, well, along with the mass transit we were talking about earlier and others, are what makes it a pleasant place to live and work, and in many cases for people to do both from a fairly close distance together, to live close to where they work. That's very much unlike the Indianapolis of 30 or 40 years ago.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Darlene who says that her husband, who is now 56, lost his job as an attorney in charge of litigation at a large life insurance company almost 3 years ago and has only had 4 or 5 interviews for similar positions around the country and is yet to be hired by a corporation. Fortunately, he opened his own law practice in 2009, but would still like to have a corporate job. But from what they've read, most companies aren't hiring people in his age bracket. I mean, as we have a graying workforce and all of that, what things do we need to be doing to get ahead of that, Pat Gibbons?
Well, there's no easy answer, and I think we all have to be sympathetic. We probably all know people that have been in those situations. Obviously, the economy and how it picks up is going to make the big difference. That I think if the optimism that we hear from Hoosiers transpires, we can be one of those places where opportunities pop up. In the meantime, I think, Darlene has mentioned, he has shown flexibility, and I think that's the best advice really for anyone, is that they have to be a little bit flexible in what they do. So he's opened his own business. It may not be exactly where he wants to be, but it's a step in the right direction, and it's good for all of us that it prompts other opportunities.
Well, and I guess I would like to reframe this a little bit and say, is some of what's going on out there is that the old expectations about what a career would be, or even frankly what a lifestyle or income level would be, now out of date? Are we going through kind of a seismic shift there? Ron Gifford, your thoughts.
Well, Darlene, I'm a recovering lawyer, practiced law for over 20 years, and I appreciate I left the practice at the end of 2007, just about the time the economy started turning, and a lot of my colleagues in the legal profession felt the brunt of that because a lot of companies could find reducing legal fees and reducing the number of lawyers on staff was a way to really deal with those cost issues. But when I started practicing, it was sort of assumed that if you went to a law firm, got a good job, and did well, you'd stay with that law firm for the rest of your career. And over time, and that was not mm-hmm. just true in the law, but it was the case in a lot of businesses. And obviously that model, it's a model that people coming out of school today is totally foreign to them and to their expectation. Mm-hmm. In fact, you read some of the surveys about the folks, the millennials and the Generation Y folks and the like. If they've not changed jobs 3 or 4 times in their first 5, 6 years of their career, they consider themselves a failure. They see moving from company to company as a way to move up and increase mm-hmm. their opportunities and the like. So I think the paradigm has absolutely changed. And there's this group of workers, probably, as I look around the room, our demographic,
yeah,
who are kind of caught in that middle-aged
man's club here.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah. So caught in that moment of time between the expectations as the world existed when we came out of school and the new realities. And so it's incumbent upon, to the extent that the state, we talked about the Workforce One programs and things like that earlier, some of the new retraining programs that Jerry mentioned. And it's really a challenge for folks like us who had that expectation to really re-engineer ourselves, not even in mid-career, but, you know, at the three-quarter mark of our career. And there's not an easy answer. You know, there's really not an easy answer. Pat's comment about being flexible is maybe the best advice any of us can give, right?
Well, I'm thinking as we walk through this, of a guest we had on a standalone program about a year ago, Richard Longworth, from the Chicago Council on World Affairs, who'd written a book called Caught in the Middle that dealt with two middles there. One was the Midwest and how it was adjusting to the global economy. But really, the other part of it was about how we have to change our perceptions of a middle-class economy, by and large. He said that as long as we keep trying to drive things toward propping up a big middle class, that at least, he said, there's some evidence that we're now moving toward what he called an hourglass economy, where you've got a bulge on one end and a bulge on the other and not a whole lot in the middle anymore. Is that a source of concern? Do we need to wrap our heads around a new kind of economic reality? Jerry Conover.
I think it's important that people in the workforce understand that the world has changed, especially those who have been around a while in the workforce, and that no longer is it the norm that a company can afford, can remain competitive if its workers don't constantly evolve in the job over the years. Gone are the days when somebody fresh out of high school could go stand at the door of the factory, sign on, join the local union, have a job that they retired from 40 years later with a comfortable retirement and a guaranteed pension. That's a different world, and it doesn't exist anymore. People need to, whether they plan to stay in the same line of work, even with the same company, need to constantly think about, well, how can I make the job constantly interesting and bring fresh ideas to it? It might require some training, maybe go to a night class or something, or do some self-study to learn new skills, new ways of looking at what I do on the job. That could apply if they're going to stay in the same company, or if they're thinking, you know, is this what I really want to do for the rest of my life, or what would I really like to do, and what do I have to do to be able to do it? Either case requires some kind of open-minded thinking about where they go and how they can prepare themselves to get there. It's a different mindset for a lot of workers who used to approach signing on in the workforce as, you know, check with me a few decades from now and give me that retirement check and I'll be a happy camper.
Well, and that gets to something. Are there certain checkpoints now in a person's career where they ought to be thinking, okay, I ought to refresh my skills, I ought to take a look at other options? I mean, as Ron mentioned, that there's a different kind of paradigm where people will think when they're in their 20s, our two callers, Jesse and Dave, are listeners who said that they wanted to explore other possibilities. You're saying in that age group now, increasingly, if they haven't shifted jobs an awful lot, they consider themselves to be struggling or stagnant. But are there kind of checkpoints like, say, 30, 35, you should be looking at making a change or reinvesting in your training to make sure that you're developing a new set of skills, 40, 45, 50?
I think the checkpoint starts at 16 now.
Okay.
And that is, so you look at a program like Dream It, Do It, that Kinexus is promoting here as it relates to advanced manufacturing, letting kids know that there are great job opportunities and career opportunities in advanced manufacturing, but it requires not just a high school degree, it requires a two-year or a four-year degree, and perhaps additional either on-the-job training or graduate work after that. I think the checkpoint is at that very early age, making sure that kids know that this has to be about continued learning and continued. So you have to graduate college, high school. You've got to go to college, whether it's 2 or 4 years. You've got to get that additional training there in order to put yourself in the position with the skill set you need to then be successful in whatever those 17 careers are going to be as you move through, you know, the rest of your adult life.
So basically, are we in agreement then that the training and retraining should be going on constantly all the way through your career? If you want to if you want to maintain an unbroken employment record. By and large, Pat Givens, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, it's, I do think it's ongoing. And actually, to give a different perspective, I think personally, everyone needs to be thinking about not only their job, but the other interests that they have, because who knows how that might develop into something that becomes a new career for you. At the same time, I think employers have to look at it from a development standpoint, too, because that's what's going to keep their top talent. And I think the fact that there are some pessimistic figures about hiring, combine that with some anticipated turnover, that's a tough combination. So employers have to be listening and saying, what can I do to develop my employees?
Do we anticipate more job growth here in the state in the next year? Jerry Conover.
Sure.
Real quick answer.
Yeah. Not huge, but some growth. I would say probably in the range of maybe 40, 50,000 jobs total, of which perhaps half would be in the central Indiana area.
Pat?
I agree. I think there is optimism. I think as if the economy continues to grow, we'll see job growth.
Ron Gifford.
Yes.
Yes.
very quick.
You're giving me the eye contact, John.
Yeah, I know. I'm bad about that. But we have been talking about the economic outlook here in central Indiana and job creation, the jobs outlook. Our guests have been Ron Gifford, Pat Gibbons, Jerry Conover. We had Gary Dick for the first segment. Thank you all for joining us. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Good to have you here.
Thank you, John.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We are going to talk next week about the ongoing debate over education reform in the Indiana State House. This is round three for those of you who have been keeping score. We will have State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Bennett back and the head of the Indiana State Teachers Association, Nate Schnellenberger. We look forward to having that conversation with them and with you. Please do join us next week for No Limits. I'm John Kroll. It's been a pleasure spending this hour with you. Take care.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. Board engineers, Matt Sosi and Josh Hamig, and intern Monica Schwab. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.